Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hello and welcome to Lore Watch, a roundtable freeform discussion about lore and the games of Blizzard Entertainment. I'm Ann Stickney, one of two lore-focused writers from Blizzard Watch, and I've got both of my wonderful co-hosts with me today. First up, he's a shaman columnist, but he's also a lore aficionado. That would be Joe Perez. Hey, Joe.
Well, hello, everybody. It is going well. I am enjoying, finally, spring weather.
I was going to say, is it still snowing up there? Because I know it was crazy for a while.
People say it's crazy, but the area that I live in is like in this weird seasonal shift. Okay. Well, no, seasonal shift, because it was warmer later into the year and then winter hung around a little bit longer than it normally does, but it still equates to the same amount of time. But regardless, it's like 60 and sunny and beautiful. And yes,
I
am excited.
You're in New York, aren't you?
I am.
Okay. Because like a lot of the baseball games that I've been watching, well, I haven't been watching them because they've been canceled because of inclement weather over the last couple of weeks.
Well,
so I didn't know if you were in that area or not.
New York is actually a really long state, and I'm at one complete opposite end of where the baseball teams are. I'm actually closer to Toronto in Canada than I am to New York City.
Okay.
So.
All right. Well, speaking of Canada, we've got our other co-host with us as well. He's the other lore-focused writer over on Blizzard Watch. That would be Matt Rossi. Hey, Rossi. I'm pretty sure where you're at got hit by snow, didn't it?
No, it's been crazy warm this week.
Really?
It's the high was 17 Celsius, which is like 60, 62 degrees Fahrenheit, which is nice. Today was 10 degrees Celsius, so you're looking at like 50, 55, but really sunny.
Okay.
We took the dog to there's a nature preserve not too far from here. We took the dog for a walk about 4 kilometers. It's still muddy and there's still some snow on the ground, but overall, yeah, it's actually gotten much warmer. It was snowing in April. Like it was the first week of the month was snowing, but it's been warm this week. Which is good because, you know, I had stuff that I had to do this week. So
we've been going back and forth here between like 70 degree weather and then the next day it's down at 50 for no discernible reason. Like there's no clouds or anything. It's just, oh, the temperature dropped a lot. Okay, well, whatever. So it's Colorado. Kind of expect that. But this is not a weather podcast.
Despite the name of the site, yeah.
Despite the name of the site, we're not here to talk about the weather. We're here to talk about lore and Blizzard Entertainment. Usually we stick to World of Warcraft this year. This show, we're actually going to turn our attention to Overwatch. Overwatch recently had a new event come out, Overwatch Uprising, as part of the Overwatch Archives kind of moniker that they have dubbed these PvE events that kind of delve into the past of Overwatch, and this time around it's Blackwatch and Overwatch. So I kind of wanted to talk about that event. We've also got some emails regarding, you know, Overwatch lore and that kind of thing. It's been a while since we've sat down and actually, like, dedicated a show to Overwatch lore, so I figured it was kind of, you know, past time that we do so. So, Retribution is the latest event. It takes place 1 year before Uprising, as far as the timeline goes. Uprising was 7 years ago, if years ago we're talking about Overwatch current day. Uprising was seven years, and then Retribution was 8 years ago. So it was basically this stuff happened a year before Uprising happened. Retribution is kind of... it's significant for a number of reasons. The biggest, like, first and foremost, the biggest reason is because it brought the attention of the world onto Blackwatch for the first time. And Blackwatch is Overwatch's special ops unit that does, you know, the secret shady stuff that Overwatch really can't get away with doing. They were kind of working under the radar until this point, until this whole incident happened. This incident took place in Venice in Rialto, and speaking of Venice incidents, this is also the incident that uncovered Moira's involvement with Blackwatch. There were several higher-ups in Overwatch that just completely disavowed all knowledge of her even being involved with anybody, because her research... We've talked about Moira before. Her methods are...
questionable.
Yeah, to say the least. And the medical community was kind of like, yeah, no, you need to stop doing what you're doing. And Blackwatch sort of stepped in. Reyes, actually, he stepped in and said, hey, you want to be part of our group, and asked her to join. Well, she did. Nobody really knew about it. Or if they did, they weren't saying that they knew anything about it. So this incident was also the one that kind of uncovered her involvement. And it also kind of started that whole spiral, maybe, of Gabriel Reyes. We see a darker side of Reyes in this one.
Yeah.
And that's kind of interesting, too. So what I want to touch on first here, though, what did you guys think about Retribution and the events that happened in Retribution?
It makes me want to see the founding of Blackwatch. It's actually really interesting to see one of the emails. Problem is, a lot of my thoughts are going to tie into one of the emails we got, so I don't want to say too much.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it was interesting to see the moment where things start to fall apart, as McCree pointed out. He says, you know, later on that he thinks maybe this is where it started to go bad for Overwatch in general. So that was
interesting.
Well,
why don't we go ahead? We'll go ahead and hit that first email then, and kind of direct that along with this. First email is from Godzilla, who says, "Hello, Overlore Watchers. It is I, Godzilla, returning with more lore questions in regards to Retribution. First off, was anyone else kind of disappointed that it wasn't a setup? From all the teasers, it seemed like Blackwatch was going to reach Antonio and find him already dead, and then they'd have to escape, and Blackwatch would end up getting the blame. Yet what we got was Gabe just deciding to end it right there. I asked this because there felt like a huge disconnect between the Retribution comic and the actual mission. In the prelude, McCree wanted to kill Antonio, and Gabe wanted to bring him back and pump him for information on Talon. Yet through the entire mission, McCree spent the majority of the time whining that they were supposed to bring Antonio in, and that he didn't sign up for this. My friends and I felt that Gabe's change in stance made sense because Antonio goaded and villain monologued him. Yet McCree comes off as almost hypocritical, because he went from, I got a bullet with his name on it, to, what were you thinking? We were supposed to bring him back alive. What do you guys think? Was there a miscommunication between the writers, or is McCree's sudden shift justifiable? Thanks again for your hard work, Godzilla."
Yeah, and here's my thing. I actually had no problem with this, and I actually thought it was interesting, because McCree to me seems to be the kind of guy that likes to be the rebel. He likes to be the one who's like, he's a little anti-authority. He's always like, you know, wants to go his own way. If you see what he is like in the modern period, like this is like eight years ago. If you look at modern McCree, who's wandering around as like a vigilante, sort of taking on jobs that he thinks are the right ones to take on, that's how he wants to be. That's how he wants his mind to work. And seeing Gabe, at this period in time, he wants Gabe to be the guy he rebels against. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, we'll kill him. Gabe's like, no, we'll do it by the book. And that's what he wanted Gabe to, that's what he wants Gabriel to be. That's who Gabriel is to him. He's the guy he reacts to. Then seeing Gabriel just shoot the guy down, that's if you're that, who am I? What am I reacting to? How do I rebel against that? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, there's definitely some merit in that. But
what do you think, Joe?
I think it's McCree reading the situation better than anybody else involved. And this is, there's a thing in the, between the comic transitioning to the event, because I kind of have to view them all as a whole. And you start looking at the cinematics for the event, both the, you know, the beginning sequence and then the end voiceover and stuff like that. The beginning sequence, I think that you can see Gabe realizing what he got walked into. And it wasn't necessarily that he changed his mind because it was the villain monologue. And I think that McCree read that situation earlier than Gabe did, maybe like a split second. And that's where the change in tone comes from, trying to get him back on the path, trying to get him back to wanting to, you know, sort of have a conscience, because I think he realized that they walked into a setup. And I do think that they walked into a setup. I don't think it was, you know, this big letdown and disappointment. I think Antonio was put out there by Talon specifically as a target to push Gabe over the edge, because I think there's some clips and there's this fan theory that's going on that I actually really, really subscribe to, where Moira was probably already working with Talon prior to this.
I mentioned this in Know Your Lore that I did about the event. Let's go
there's
back
some interesting. There's some interesting cinematography choices that kind of lend to that as well.
Let's go back to McCree for a second here, though. They're right. Godzilla is right in that there is kind of, it feels like there's a disconnect there, because McCree was the one who was like, yeah, let's go kill the guy. And then he was like, why'd you kill the guy? You know, so I think that more than a sense of rebellion or anything else, I think McCree is very much a person who wants to be in control of his own destiny. Mm-hmm. And wants to know where things stand and where things are. So he went into this mission with a specific set of orders, and you know, a very specific set of orders from Reyes, and also, you know, technically from Overwatch, but not really from Overwatch, because Morrison didn't say yay or nay. But they're walking that fine line that Black Watch walks, right? That one where nothing's officially authorized, but the higher-ups definitely know what's going on. Morrison knew what was going on. He knew that Reyes was going to go do this thing. And I think McCree was under the understanding that, you know, this is how things are going to go down. This is what the plan is. Here's the plan. We're going to stick to the plan. And the moment that Reyes deviated from that plan, it wasn't about, are we going to kill Antonio or not? It was, whoa, why did you just change the plan split second? Like, what? We're not even going to talk about this? Do you realize what this is going to do to Overwatch? Do you realize what this is going to do to us? I think that McCree read that situation a lot more clearly than maybe anybody else in that room, in that he saw not just Antonio, you know, Reyes pulling a gun and killing Antonio, but he saw what the potential fallout from that could be. And that was all just kind of, you know, reinforced when we had a veritable Talon army show up, like, the instant after he died. There was just hundreds of them coming, swarming out of nowhere, and they had to scramble to get out of there. And to McCree, that's not a situation in which he's in control. And that's,
well, especially
not...
when you're a wet work group that doesn't deal with direct confrontation very often, or shouldn't very often, right?
Right. And
you're supposed
and
to be
the
in the shadows.
The thing is what we have to keep in mind too with McCree is that McCree was originally part of the Deadlock gang, like, way back when. And he was caught and he was given a choice. He could go rot in a cell forever, or he could join Blackwatch. Blackwatch was kind of his salvation in a way. If he doesn't have Blackwatch, who is he? If that stability that he's found, as weird as it is, that stability within Blackwatch, if that suddenly falls out from under him, who is he? Where does he go? What does he do? And we kind of see a reflection of that later, because obviously the answer to that, you know, was he ran off and became this, like, vigilante kind of situation thing going on, where he was that whole, like you mentioned, Rossi, that whole gunslinger for hire thing. But he only really took causes that he believed were just. So he has this kind of innate sense of justice, of what's right insofar as it applies to him and his own morals. But McCree's an interesting character.
There's actually something else to point out when talking about this too, though. All those Talon guys don't do a thing until Antonio dies.
Yep.
And that's interesting. Going back on what both of you were saying, that this was in fact a setup. I think it was too, and I think that the reason it was a setup is because Antonio gets to stand there and do his villain monologue, and absolutely nobody. There's an entire army of Talon operatives, but they don't drop in and surround the you know team before Gabe kills him. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They could be standing in a big circle around the heroes, but you know, with Antonio behind them monologuing, that's not what happens. Antonio gives his monologue, and then Gabe shoots him.
So here's my fun question for you guys, because this actually kind of floats into that whole theory thing. Was Reyes working for Talon all along?
No.
Because we call the event Retribution, right? Was it Retribution for what had been done to the Blackwatch facility and Gerard, or was it Talon's retribution against Antonio for doing something stupid? Did they send Reyes in to take out Antonio specifically so that, as we saw in the end of that cinematic, that second generation of Talon, Doomfist, everybody else, could step up and take his place?
I really don't think so. Otherwise, because if that was the case, they wouldn't have needed to give incentive mm-hmm. for Reyes to go after him. You have the explosion of the facility that took out all of those people. So you have, you know, and there's even that scene with all of the coffins, right? Mm-hmm. And then you have the scene with, what is it, Gerard in the hospital bed, one of Reyes's, you know, really good friends, you know, sitting there after they, you know, bomb the facility. They wouldn't need to do that for Blackwatch to do a mission in which they kill somebody. Like, I don't believe that that would be the case, because Blackwatch, especially Reyes being in at a high level position, could present something. Here's what we need to do. We need to go and get him. Here's what we need information for. It feels too massive of a setup at the front for that to be the case. Well, also, because I think. Because I think there's a very visible switch that flicks in him during that cinematic that isn't, this is what I originally came here to do. That's, well, I'm kind of darned if I do, darned if I don't. So this is what's going to happen now. You know what I mean? That's where I come from on it.
I do also think that if Reyes was working for Talon all along, there are things that would have still happened. But I don't know how to put this. Like, basically, it felt to me more like a mission where Talon did set it up, and they set it up. The woman who looks an awful lot like Widowmaker but can't be in the cinematic, in the comic, sets things up
random,
to get...
Random Talon agent who just, set the bomb.
Yeah, she just, you know, the whole thing, the way everything is set up feels to me more like they wanted Reyes there. They wanted him to break and kill Antonio, to get Antonio out of the way for their own purposes. Certainly they wanted this to happen, but I don't think it's as simple as Reyes working for them all along, because then he wouldn't have had to do the whole song and dance mm-hmm. about, we're not going to kill him, we're just going to capture him. It's not like anybody on Blackwatch would have cared. Nobody on that team would have said, oh no, we can't murder a man. No.
Yep.
They would have been perfectly fine with going in and killing Antonio.
So they
wouldn't have been fine with breaking mission protocol and getting themselves exposed.
This is the part where I'm going to turn our attention to another player in this whole debacle, and that would be Moira.
Yeah.
Moira was... Let's talk about Moira a little bit. Moira was deliberately recruited for Blackwatch by Gabriel Reyes. He brought her in specifically, and he brought her in because he wanted someone to advise him on matters pertaining to genetics. It was never really explained beyond that, but there was artwork in Moira's origin story that showed Reyes sitting there with a bunch of, like, you know, sensors or whatever on his body, and he had that black smoke coming off of him, that Reaper sort of smoke. So there's two different houses of thought about this. A lot of people assume that Moira was the one who did this to him, that she was the one who did all of this genetic experimentation, and it was part of her research was what made this go horribly wrong or whatever, because she would cross lines that nobody else would cross. I come from a second school of thought that is also equally interesting. Here's what we don't know about Gabriel Reyes. He was part of a super soldier program with Jack Morrison. It was a classified program. It still hasn't been declassified. Nobody really knows what was done to these men and women that were in this program, just that they were genetically enhanced to have, like, super speed, strength, all this other stuff. Morrison and Reyes were taken out of that program, and they were two of the founding members of Overwatch. Was Reyes exhibiting these side effects, this whole genetic weirdness that was going on? Was that why he brought Moira on? Because stuff was happening to him and he didn't understand what was going on and wanted to control it? Or there's an alternate, the theory that she did this to him, maybe he just wanted some way to infiltrate better. But
that's where I'm thinking.
So there's two different, like I said, there's two different methods of reasoning here. And Moira, you know, after Overwatch kind of fell apart, she was forced to turn to unconventional sources of funding. And then eventually she was invited to join the scientific collective that founded Oasis. She was appointed Minister of Genetics. Nobody seemed to have a problem with her there. But there were some rumors floating around out there that said that Talon had been supporting her for years. Years.
And there's also
implying, because, yeah. I mean, if we're going to talk years here, that means while she was in Blackwatch.
Yeah.
Plus, the other thing is that while she joined Blackwatch because Reyes recruited her, but the stick on that, you know, the carrot was, join us and you'll have funding and everything you need. The stick was, Overwatch itself was condemning her.
Yep,
at the
I was
exact
just going to say that.
Time.
Yep.
So she was in a really weird position where she have no loyalty to the larger organization. Her relationship with it wasn't with McCree. McCree is loyal to Blackwatch and beyond that to Overwatch because it gave him a second chance. Genji, you know, again, Mercy saved his life. He's got a loyalty.
Yeah, his life was saved as a result.
He's got a loyalty to the organization beyond Reyes. But Moira, her deal was with Reyes specifically. And it wasn't a loyalty. This is a quid pro quo. He's doing stuff for her. She's doing stuff for him. Mm-hmm. I don't know, you know, whether or not she was working for Talon at that time is indeterminate. Like, we have no idea yet. They haven't revealed anything. But it certainly is possible that even then she was looking for a better deal. Because she was never there as somebody who, you know, this isn't somebody who ideologically felt like the world needed to be saved. This was somebody who was like, I want to do my work and I will, you know, what's the deal I can make that will let me do my work?
Here's the fun part, because when they talk about her dealings with Talon and the rumors that surrounded, that kind of swirled that whole association between her and Talon, said that Talon had been supporting her for years and aiding her experiments in exchange for utilizing the results of those experiments for their own purposes.
Well,
if Reyes was one of those experiments, Talon wanted Reyes.
Maybe, or they wanted the genetic data from him. So take it a step back, though, too.
Sure.
What was Moira doing as part of the Blackwatch? It wasn't just genetic research for Reyes. It was also looking at developing new weapons and technologies, right? So now you have an operative inside of basically, in theoretically, we'll say that she's a talent operative at this point. She has access to all the Overwatch databases and mainframes. Well, we see in the scenario that they have access to a lot of technology that looks very much Overwatchy. They have the Crusader charges, which is very much something that we only saw on the Crusader armor. Well, there is a member of Overwatch who happens to be the last Crusader, more or less. You have people utilizing technology that looks very, very similar to the Tracer technology in those assassins. You have all of this information that is being used by Talon, all these weapons and armor that are being used by Talon that were very specific to Overwatch people. And yes, I understand the argument can be made, well, it's a game feature, whatever. But it would make sense that if she was in charge of weapons and technology, that she would have access to that database. And if her patrons are like, give us this information because it's useful to us and we want to utilize it, it would make a perfect out for it. She was a leak. And not only that, the information from Reyes, yes, she was experimenting on him because we don't know why. But we can assume that he either wanted to open up more of the power that was inside of him, because the super soldier serum or program that he was working with or part of with Jack, Jack's very, for lack of a better term, he's stable, right? He's faster, he's stronger, he's more resilient, but he's stable. So was Reyes. Reyes was at this point where he was stronger and faster, but with all the atrocities that were being perpetrated in the world, you have this sort of burden of, I can be doing more, that Reyes takes on to himself. And so
is
it would
that
be a perfect...
what Reyes was doing? See, that's the question I have is, why did he bring Moira in? If he knew Moira's reputation, why did he bring her in? Because there's one of two reasons here. There's the one where, yeah, he thinks he can do better and he thinks Moira can help him accomplish that better, whatever that happens to be. Or there's something genetically wrong with Gabriel Reyes and he realizes it, but he's not telling anyone and he's trying to find some kind of solution and he turns to the wrong person to get that solution.
See, but that's the thing though, like with Mercy and access to Mercy, I can't fathom that Reyes wouldn't go to her and say, fix me. Yeah.
Because it was wrong. Something was wrong, like seriously wrong.
Let me put it to you this way, Joe, because this is something I actually have experience with. When my vision was deteriorating, I was main tanking for a guild. I didn't tell anybody. I didn't let anybody know. When I had a problem and I couldn't do a fight, I just... And in fact, you were in the guild where this was happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I basically ended up leaving the guild and I didn't tell anyone, oh, hey, I can't make these fight. I can't do this fight because I can't see what's going on. I just stopped showing up. And when people feel like they're in a position of authority or in a position of, you know, responsibility, they have different ways of handling it. But one of the ways is to conceal your problem. If he had a problem where he was falling apart, like you see, if his body was literally deteriorating and then regenerating in a rapid rate, I could see him not going to Mercy, because Mercy would tell Jack, you know.
And the last
Mercy
thing
would
he wants
Morrison.
To do, the last thing he, the very last thing that he wants to do is give Overwatch or Morrison or anybody in charge of Overwatch or the UN that founded Overwatch to begin with and chose Morrison over him to lead. The last thing he wants to do is reinforce that decision and say, and give them the impression that that decision that they made was the right one. He wasn't happy that Morrison got picked over him. He wasn't happy about it.
Well, but here, and going back to the other thing, the reason that I think Moira caused the thing is even on Overwatch's own hero breakdown for Reaper, it's not a failed byproduct of the super soldier program. It's a failed byproduct of, or a byproduct of failed genetic alteration.
Yeah.
Which forces cells to simultaneously decay and regenerate. So I don't think he was necessarily decaying.
They were doing something to them in the super soldier program. They were doing something to those guys at the genetic level. They were doing some kind of genetic enhancement to these guys in that super soldier program. We don't know the details of what they were doing. So
yeah, we need to know more.
What I'm saying here is it could be one of two things. Yeah, Moira is tinkering around in his DNA and did something wrong. Or this problem goes all the way back to that super soldier program that nobody is talking about. Nobody's asked any questions about that thing. It's still classified. What were they doing? Nobody knows.
Now, I mean, certainly I'm still on the side of Moira did it, but there's a point to they're thinking about the other possibility, because we don't know. We know very little about the super soldier program.
It was enough. Whatever they did was enough that Jack Morrison didn't die. In that explosion at the Swiss facility, everybody thought he was dead, and he wasn't. Nobody thought he survived that thing, and he did. How did that happen? Don't know.
Have we, like, really, I mean, aside from, like, cute skins, in the comics, have they depicted him with his faceplate off yet?
No. Not currently, no.
So there's no lore picture of his face. We don't
not present day.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We don't know what shape he came through that in. We know about Reaper and his hyper accelerated degeneration and regeneration.
We've never seen Reaper without the mask off either. Yeah.
We don't know what's going on with Jack right now. We know like his powers are pretty established. He's a stronger, tougher, faster human.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't seem to have anything as freaky as Reaper. But is he Jack Morrison, the undying man? Do you kill him and he gets up half an hour later? I mean, we don't know what's going
Old
on.
Soldiers Does, never die.
Yeah. And the one thing that I keep sticking to, too, is that image in her origin story, Moira's origin story, where Reyes does not exactly look like what he's seeing with the black wisp coming off of him is, you know, something he's seen before.
No.
Like
I'm thinking that's a very
surprised face on her. She's very pleased with herself in that image.
And what I'm thinking is whatever it was that was going wrong with him, she tweaked it to the point where it turned into what Reaper is now, that whole
sure.
black wispy decay acceleration. I feel like there was something going on or going wrong with Gabriel Reyes, and he knew it. He wasn't going to tell anybody about it. He brought Moira in to try and stabilize it or control it or do something with it so that it was a factor that was beneficial rather than detrimental. Because Reyes is seeing his share of combat. Like, he really has. If you look at in the Retribution in the comic, his face is all beat up. Like, he's scarred back and forth.
Plus, I mean,
he's seen a lot of combat.
There's also a third possibility here. Reyes may not have actually had anything particularly wrong with him other than the fact that both he and Jack were getting older.
Maybe.
You know? And one of the things about that is Reyes is the kind of person who would go and get someone like Moira. Because you pointed it out, and he was mad that the UN passed him over. Imagine he's sitting in Overwatch. He's in Blackwatch now. He's running it. He's got Jack as his overall commander. He does not feel that this was the right choice. He feels like he should have been made commander. And as time passes, because Overwatch has got more than, you know, they had a longer history than we've seen. They were like, you know, from the Omnic Crisis on. It's been a while. He's losing a step.
See,
and if he's losing a step, who is he going to get to who can make him like he was again? Who can make him the super soldier that he was? Well, nobody's experimenting on that anymore. The program
so that
is effectively
in the event that Morrison eventually retires and or gets pushed out unceremoniously, like Reinhardt did when he reaches a certain age. Maybe they'll turn to Reyes instead.
Yeah. But Reyes doesn't want to be pushed out. Like, he doesn't want that either. And so you could have a situation where it's all in Reyes's head, where he just sees himself as deteriorating, whether or not he is, and he goes to Moira and says, make me better, and you'd still get the same basic effect, where she's working for Talon the whole time, and she takes the opportunity to start pushing him down a path they want to go. You know, it doesn't. What's really important in all this, though, is that his recruitment of her I think McCree is right in that it's not actually the Venice incident itself. It's recruiting Moira, which McCree was always opposed to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was the first time that Reyes made a serious error. He recruited someone who had no loyalty to Overwatch. She had no reason not to betray them. Whether or not she did is immaterial. She was a person who had her own agenda that was never in line with Overwatch's. And her only, it wasn't even loyalty. Her only allegiance was to Reyes directly. He had recruited her, and that's not strong enough. You know what I mean?
Joe, what were you saying?
See, and part of the whole thing that, and this is going to sound sort of selfish, I guess. I like the idea of Reyes not being corrupted, so to speak, not having an ulterior motive, not being entirely selfish, because he, in his backstory, his origin story before becoming Reaper, he wanted to protect people. You know, he was that kid from Los Angeles that, you know, grew up, joined the United States military, became a senior officer, was a celebrated veteran, highly respected, but was still doing work to protect people. And even in Blackwatch, the reason he does what he does is because at the end of the day, the dirty things that he's willing to do are to protect people as a whole. And the idea of him reaching out to Moira, because one, you pointed out the Super Soldiers program is done. It's over with. Those records are sealed, right? So if they're not making any more of them, right? And this war that everybody knows is coming with Talon, essentially, is being lost in this war of attrition that they can't keep up with. So I could see Reyes as a character looking at this, looking that my work is not done. There's still more that I need to do, you know. And who knows what he's seen? Who knows what they went through in those programs? We don't know. But he might not feel that they gave him everything that they could, that there's more potential in him that needs to be unlocked. And so you have this paper that's published by Moira that essentially says you can rewrite the base DNA of any living creature to unlock its full potential, which is a very, you know, Doomfist survival of the fittest thing anyway.
Oh, yeah.
But you're Reyes. You read this. Everybody else around you is like, this is a terrible idea. But you're looking at it and you're like, this might be able to finally give me an edge. I might be able to save more people. And him recruiting her specifically for that purpose, knowing that he might have things in him that his DNA has been fundamentally altered, but not knowing how or what else he could possibly do, and recruiting her to unlock that. And I think that's where my happy place is for him, because yes, he became a monster, or we think he became a monster after that. It's also just as likely he wears the mask, not because he's horribly disfigured, but because he's become something that he wasn't and doesn't want to look at himself anymore. And I kind of like the idea that he wasn't always the bad guy.
Wait,
you know what I mean?
Hold up. I like the idea that he doesn't want to look at himself and see what he's become or whatever, because if you go back to the Reflections comic, where do we see Reaper? Creeping in an alley, watching a very happy family. There's no indication that he's related to that family or anything. He's just watching it. It's the life he never had.
And there's, you know, one of the other things to keep in mind when we're talking about all this, Reyes's original identity was as Soldier 24. That's when he was in the Augment program.
Yeah.
That's before and during the Omnic Crisis. He joined the army. He did very well for himself. He eventually became, you know, a veteran. He was actually discharged, because that's when you're a veteran, you're out. He then went into the program, got enhanced, went into the Omnic Crisis, fought in the Omnic Crisis, because Overwatch wasn't formed like the day after the Omnic Crisis. It was several years into it when they finally realized they needed Overwatch, except the Russians, who were like, nope, we're going to use big robots. We're not doing
it. They did very well with those big robots, to be fair.
To be fair, but I'm just saying that most of the rest of the world went with Overwatch. Overwatch had by the time we're looking at the Retribution comic, which is 8 years before the game, that's several years into its operation. You know, Morrison had been leading at that time. It really is one of those things you think about. Reyes as a person, this is a guy who has, to this day, I find his membership in Talon fascinating, because it almost feels like it's beneath him.
See,
does that make sense?
I don't know if it's necessarily beneath him. Here's my theory on that in particular, and this is why I like the idea of him not being able to look at himself. I think Moira's got him by the short hairs. I think she destabilized him or did something to him that she's keeping him together, and I think that that's why he's working with them, not necessarily that he wants to murder everybody, because, and we've talked about this before, and this is one of those things that I really like about it. He's had opportunity to kill a lot of Overwatch people and hasn't. He purposely disables them, but he doesn't kill them. Why? If he's that cold blood of a murderer, why didn't he murder Jack? Why didn't he murder Winston? He had the opportunity to several times, both of them. He didn't. I think that Moira's got something on him, and I think it's what keeping him alive. And so his choices are stay alive and try to bring it down from within, or do something to, you know, get the final piece so he can go back to doing what he originally wanted to do, which is bring down Talon. And why he's cool with Sombra, why he's very cool with Sombra, who also has a very similar path to him, and why he's doing this. And I think that that's part of it too, because, going back to, like, I think he does, he's not necessarily that evil, because in the Michael Chu Reddit AMA last year, they did confirm that the Holiday family that he was stalking wasn't randomly chosen. That was his family.
Uh-huh.
So that was, they flat out said that in the Michael Chu Reddit AMA. So I don't think he's evil. I don't think he's bad. And I don't think he's doing this or anything with Talon by choice, because
I'm going to tie this back to the McCree thing.
Go ahead.
One of the things I think that McCree would suddenly be shocked by Gabe doing what he did isn't just that he sees what the effect's going to be. It isn't just that he realizes. I think it's, for lack of a better word, Gabriel Reyes changed Jesse McCree's life.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And he sees the death of his, well, I don't want to say his friend, but.
Yeah, there's, up till that point, Reyes was a dark character, like a guy who could do things that were hard, but he never, if he told you we're doing it this way, that was oak. You could take it as, you know, well, Reyes said that that's the plan. So that's the plan. McCree suggested killing Antonio because, sure, why wouldn't McCree suggest it? But when Reyes says we're going to win, we're going to get him, Reyes lays out the reasons. He tells him this is why we're going to do it. And McCree is fine with it. McCree is used to following Reyes. But when Reyes goes off the rails, it's like I said, in a way it is, like, who am I going to rebel against? But it's also the reason that he has Reyes to rebel against is because Reyes picked him. Reyes went into that cell and said, look, you can be more than some schmuck in a gang. You can be more than someone who's going to spend the rest of his life in a cell for being an idiot and for hurting people. So you can do more with your life. And now there they are in a crux, and Reyes has done exactly what he saved McCree from.
So,
you know what I mean?
I'm going to interrupt here because we've been talking for a while and I want to get to one of the other emails that we've got here. This one, actually, it wasn't an email. It was from the Patreon Discord. This is from Zell, who says, what was the plan after extracting Antonio? He makes it seem like he had the courts and justice system deep in his pockets. Were they really just going to put him into that system, or would they have a secret black site off the books somewhere? So had things gone according to plan and they had gotten Antonio, what were they going to do?
I think that they made it pretty clear in the comic that he wasn't exactly going to go to a normal jail cell. And that because it wasn't officially sanctioned by Overwatch, and Overwatch technically didn't have a stake in what happened, so to speak.
Reyes, like, wanted information. He wanted
Reyes
enough,
wanted information.
He wanted enough information that they could actually take Talon down. At this point, they had been fighting Talon for like over a year.
So trying to grab somebody and sticking them in their, you know, the Black Watch dental chair, you know, for a little bit, would have been right up their alley. And I think also to go back to the original thing that we're talking about with McCree, I think that's why McCree backed down on killing him, Antonio, so readily, is because Reyes says there's worse things we can do to him than kill him. Killing will be swift and it'll end his suffering, but he's going to talk and he's going to tell us everything. And McCree seems really okay with that because I think he understands that, yeah, it's going to get dirty. It's going to get, you know, behind closed doors. It's going to be really awful, and it's going to be painful, and he's going to suffer. Yeah.
This is a black ops military organization.
Yep.
I mean, these are assassins, and you know, they're going to take him somewhere, but it's a black site. They're not going to tell anyone about it. It's not going to be anywhere near Italy. He's not going to have any friends that he can call. It probably won't even be in Europe. So that even his European connections can't help him. If anyone's going to come help him, they're going to have to go to some inhospitable place in the middle of freaking nowhere that they don't know about. You know what I mean? This is, we have enough real life examples of this. It's going to be that. It's going to be a black site. That's what he was going to do. Whether or not they overestimated their ability to get him to such a place based on all the Talon agents who drop in, you know, if it had looked like he wasn't going to kill Antonio, if they were just going to take him, it looks like Talon would have just dropped in then and possibly killed Antonio themselves. But it definitely feels like it would have been a lot harder than they had intended it to be. But yeah, they had a place to put him.
Okay, I have one more really quick question and answer for you guys. Like, I want a quick answer out of this, and then we're going to go to the last email. Quick question. Why did Reyes join Talon if he was so dead set against everything that they were doing and everything that they stood for in Retribution?
I honestly believe that it's because Moira is the only thing keeping him alive.
What do you think, Rossi?
I have thought for a while that he's working against Talon. Remember we talked about it last year?
Mm-hmm.
And I said that there's a lot more going on with Reaper than we yet know. Moira keeping him alive could certainly be possible part of it, but I feel like there's we've yet to actually see what his plan for Talon is, for that matter. Because keep in mind, he's by no means is he in charge of Talon right now. You know,
do you think that's why he's hanging out with Widowmaker?
That could be one thing.
Trying to protect his friend's wife in whatever way he can, even though she's not really herself anymore.
I'm going to be completely upfront with you guys. I do not think we actually know what happened to LaCroix.
Yeah, I was going to say that too.
I do not think the story we have been told is the actual story, and it'll be interesting to see what comes up in the future. I will just say that I would not be surprised to see him again in the present day.
LaCroix, yeah.
It'd be pretty cool.
I've got similar shades of that too. I've had that similar thought.
I don't know who's speaking to who. I don't know if it's Amari speaking to Widowmaker or if it's Mercy or somebody says something about him and she says, "You don't know what you're talking about." Like Widowmaker's response is, "You don't know what you are talking about," when Gerard is brought up.
Because if Gerard's still alive and he was in charge of Black Watch, which he was.
He wasn't in charge of Black Watch, but he was working with them. He wasn't part of Black Watch.
He's more of a liaison, sure.
But if he's that good friends with Reyes, faking his own death and getting Reyes embedded into Talon would definitely be a play that I think they'd both be up for.
Yeah, more complex than we think.
Could be. I mean, there's no reason it has to be. It could be as simple as it currently appears. But I just, there's enough out there that makes me wonder. Like, Widowmaker clearly still has something going on in her that makes her go to his gravesite. Which
she still feels. Yeah.
She felt nothing and didn't care. Why go to his gravesite? Why get upset when someone, you know, brings him up? You know? She's obviously not the robot she wants people to think she is, and she's not just alive when she kills people, like she says. There's more going on with Widowmaker. There's more going on with Reaper. There's more going on with Talon. Like, I wouldn't be surprised at some point if Reaper tries to kill Doomfist.
Okay, let's go ahead and move on from here. We've spent a great deal of time talking about three of the four known members of Black Watch. There's also Genji, who spent most of Retribution being very quiet. Didn't say a lot. We know, as far as Genji is concerned, his loyalty to Overwatch is pretty much because they saved his life. He was dying. Mercy managed to make him alive again by kind of incorporating most of his body with, like, cybernetics, pretty much. Genji always struck me as kind of interesting because a lot of the concept in Overwatch is that whole struggle between humanity and Omnix, and you know, you have that whole Omnic crisis setting and everything. Genji is kind of like that overlap point. He's like that living link between human and Omnix. It's like he is the embodiment of that, and it's kind of interesting because he was involved with Black Watch and then he left it at some point. It was after Retribution. It was after Uprising, presumably. We don't really know the details other than he left when his mission was complete. Like, that's all that is said about it. And we don't know what his mission was exactly. But afterwards, he kind of drifted for years until he encountered Zenyatta and the rest of the Omnix that were all part of that whole Shambhali movement type thing where they were talking about Omnix with souls and that kind of thing. Anyway, and in speaking with Zenyatta and studying with Zenyatta, he kind of reconciled that dual existence that he kind of lives as both man and machine. So the last email that we have here, it's actually talking about Genji a little bit, but also about Hanzo as well, and that whole overarching theme of humanity versus Omnic existence. And this one is from Shisui, who's a Blood Elf monk and a Genji main, who says, "Hi, Watchers. In the animated short Dragons, it's stated that Hanzo had to take his brother Genji's life to maintain balance within the Shimada clan. Hanzo seems to represent a larger demographic of individuals resisting change since the fallout of the Omnic Crisis, while Genji's acceptance of himself and his brother's actions seem to symbolize an embrace of this change despite his traumatic experience. Could you give us some insight as to how this dichotomy of views manifests elsewhere in the Overwatch series?" So what we're looking at here is Hanzo kind of represents that group that doesn't want change necessarily, doesn't trust Omnic society, and Genji is kind of representative of that side that has moved on and is trying to, you know, well, form a new Mani out of the world, basically, because new Mani is like where humanity and Omnics come together to live, and they're living actually in harmony as far as that is concerned. I don't know if you guys have any examples right off the bat, but...
I'm not sure. It's not really an example, but I don't think that's why Hanzo and Genji fought. And I don't think whatever Dragon says, I mean, it's kind of Hanzo justifying himself. Hanzo and Genji fought because Hanzo wanted Genji to take part of the clan. He wanted him to become, like, to do things for the clan, not just take its money and be a playboy, which is what Genji wanted to do. Genji was good at it being a ninja, but he didn't particularly want to do it. He was kind of a slacker. And their fight initially is over that. Like, it's said in multiple places that it wasn't about, you know, I want things to be the old way, I want things to be the new way. It was, I want you to take your responsibility to this clan seriously. And Genji being, I'm not really that into the clan, the whole, like, criminal thing. It's not doing it for me. I like the money, but... And that's their original conflict, where Hanzo, you know, almost kills Genji. Genji becomes very antagonistic to the Shimada clan afterwards when he's in Overwatch. And he certainly embraces those things afterwards as he becomes, you know, like you pointed out, everything you just said about, like, you know, how he meets Zenyatta's, you know, Zenyatta's group and all that. That's all true, but that's after the initial fight with Hanzo. That's kind of the life he builds for himself. Does that make sense? So,
well,
I think
keep in mind
way...
that Hanzo, it wasn't really Hanzo acting in and of his own volition here. The clan elders pretty much told Hanzo, hey, yeah, you need to go straighten out your younger brother. He's not doing what he needs to be doing.
After their father died. Because their father basically...
After their father died.
Him.
But Hanzo was the elder son, so he was pretty much bound by duty to take that position of leadership, and he was sort of groomed for that position the entirety of his life. Genji didn't get that same kind of training because he was the younger son, but he mm-hmm. was still expected at some point to, you know, step up and help rule in some aspect or another. And
yeah,
Genji, exactly. Well, Hanzo, it's interesting because Hanzo, like, immediately after this happened, Hanzo kind of fell apart. What he had to do kind of broke his heart, and it was like everything that he had been trained to do his entire life led to this moment. So who was he really? And it kind of, he rejected his father's legacy at that point and just abandoned the clan.
And that's the interesting thing. Yeah,
he also ditched the sword entirely. Like, that's when he stopped fighting with a sword. That's why Hanzo has a bow.
But neither of them are basically the dichotomy that's presented here. Neither of them are that, is what I'm saying. Hanzo, at that time, you could say he was, like, keeping the old ways, but he isn't that now. He's very much, you know, I rejected that way of life.
Well,
so.
I think, and if you don't look at it in a literal sense, if you look at it in a figurative kind of sense, and you look at dragons in particular, when Genji takes his mask off and shows his brother what has been done, that he is Genji, Hanzo's first reaction is, what did they do to you? He's just horrified that his brother is this half-man, half-machine thing that may or may not actually be Genji, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, that doesn't necessarily have to be a whole, you know, this pertains to the Omnics thing. It could literally be him staring at what used to be his brother and not recognizing him fully anymore, because that would be, I think... It parallels real life in, like, you know, soldiers coming home from war and getting prosthetics and, you know, just their family kind of being shocked at it. Like, I could see it being something like that. It's like, and also he was supposed to have killed his brother, right? So here's this ghost standing in front of him that isn't but is his brother at the same time. That's unsettling. That is 100% unsettling, because you don't expect that. You're this life that you've built, because this is how many years after Dragon, or after he was supposed to have killed him for the clan? How many years is that after it? Like, it's not immediate.
At least 8, because...
Yeah.
Because Genji was there during Retribution, and that was 8 years ago, so I'd say probably 8 to 10, somewhere in there. It's been a long time.
So you're looking at a decade of believing in your brain that your brother is dead at your hands. And then you see this thing that you're so convinced that your brother is dead that you see this thing in front of you that has your brother's face. And I mean, how do you react to that? So I don't know if it's necessarily that it's anti-omnic. I think it's more shock of, you know, I've mourned you for 10 years and you're supposed to be dead. Why are you here?
I think if you want a better representation of that whole anti-omnic stance, because this is something that has come up like repeatedly, this is one of those kind of overarching themes is, can we just get along? And there are some people who are on board with that idea, and there are some people who are very much not. And I think one of the strongest examples of that would be Roadhog. His name was Mako Rutledge back in the day, but during the Omnic crisis, he and his fellow residents of the Outback basically spent a gigantic chunk of the Omnic crisis fighting to protect their homes out there on the Outback, like fighting against the Omnics and trying to achieve some kind of victory. And when the Omnic crisis was over, they thought they could breathe a sigh of relief, go back to living life the way that they did before all the robots went crazy, right? Except that the Australian government stepped in and said, hi, we're going to take all of this land here and the Omnium, this right here, and we're just going to hand that over to the Omnics to try and establish some kind of long-term peace accord. All you people who actually live on this land, yeah, you need to get out. So for Roadhog at that point, and for, you know, again, the fellow residents of that area, they were furious. They were absolutely furious because they had spent all of these years fighting against these people only to have the government sweep in and hand the people they were fighting against their land, the land that they had been fighting to protect, you know. So they formed this thing called the Australian Liberation Front, and they fought back against the Omnium, and it eventually led to this incident where they sabotaged the Omnium's fusion core, and it made this mass explosion that just, it destroyed the facility. It also irradiated all of the surrounding land and turned his former home, that land that they had been fighting for, into this kind of apocalyptic wasteland, which is where you run into stuff like Junkertown. Junkrat was affected by the radiation that came off of that facility. But for Mako Rutledge, it was absolutely a matter of he does not like Omnics, like, at all. This is not a point to which he is going to yield ever. They destroyed his livelihood. They destroyed his home. He's not happy with the government either, because they turned around and like gave his land to these things that he does not like. So there's a lot going on there where I think, you know, that dichotomy kind of presents itself. What's really interesting here, though, is that, you know, there are some people who think that Talon is very much an anti-Omnic organization, and they aren't. They orchestrated the assassination of Takartha Mundata. They did do that.
But that wasn't necessarily anti-Omnic. That was anti-him.
That's the thing, is Talon's actually been shown to work with Omnics, and they have one on their council, Maximilian.
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
We haven't heard much about. So I don't think that Talon is necessarily anti-Omnic as much as they're trying to create chaos in any way possible. They're trying to foment that chaos and conflict. Mundata was very much a proponent of stopping the chaos and conflict and, you know, ushering the world into this harmony. That's the last thing that Talon wants. So I feel like, as far as that's concerned, Talon's not really anti-Omnic. But you see that kind of sentiment wherever you go. I mean, you go to London. If you go to the map at King's Row, there's all kinds of stuff back and forth there about, you know, Omnics go home or humans go home. Uprising was all about Null Sector coming out and trying to establish themselves and, like, doing this whole uprising thing. It's not easy right now, because the Omnic crisis was this moment where Omnics basically rebelled. They rebelled, they rewrote their own programs, they turned against humanity in this awful, awful, awful war that was global. I mean, it was all over the world. It was like every every continent was hit by this and hit by this hard. So it's really hard coming back from that to instill any kind of sense of trust with these creatures, particularly even when you have a group that says, yeah, we have souls and we have, like, we share the same kind of way of thinking that you do. Because Zenyatta and Mandata and the rest of the Shambhali, they went off into the mountains of Nepal and they kind of meditated on this whole thing and realized that they had an existence. They had a life such as it was. They weren't just robots. They were living creatures with, like, souls. They were entities with free will, that kind of thing. And can humanity put aside what happened with the Omnic crisis and actually get along with the Omnics? That seems to be a lot of the conflict right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's absolutely part of the game. It's like some characters I don't really feel work with it as others do. I really, you know, someday we're going to have to see a Bastion, Bastion Reinhardt road trip.
Oh boy.
I don't remember killing a lot of you. The robot doesn't say, Bastion doesn't say anything.
Sad chirp.
But yeah, there's
Bastion
a lot of that.
Bastion is interesting too, because Bastion is very much, I mean, he was one of those war constructs that was created specifically for the Omnic crisis. And all of a sudden he has this spark of, I don't want to say it's a spark of humanity, but it is. I mean, if you want to, it's a spark of self-worth and a spark of free will. And there's that beautiful, beautiful cinematic that they did with Bastion, where he remembers the things that he did and it terrifies him. Like, it horrifies him that this happened to him and he doesn't understand. It's really interesting that they could convey so much without a single line of dialogue in that cinematic. So yeah, I don't know. As far as Hanzo and Genji go, I love the two of them. I think that they're great. I think that they're great characters. I think there's a lot more there to work with than what we've been shown so far. And I really want to see the post-Dragons fallout. Like, what happened afterwards. In the Reflections comic, we got kind of a shot of Hanzo buying something for a kid, like bread or something. I don't remember. Anyway, he was doing something nice. But he was still, you know, out in the world, not really interacting with anyone or anything. And Genji is still hanging out with Zenyatta, which is good. Genji has found that sense of balance that he was missing. Overwatch didn't give it to him. Overwatch gave him his life. Zenyatta gave him his sense of self. So which one do you weigh more on? And I think right now, obviously, you know, Overwatch is gone. Blackwatch went weird. And I also find it really interesting that McCree took off. He didn't take off after this Retribution incident. McCree took off when that rivalry and infighting between Reyes and Morrison got to the point where it was really uncomfortable. Like, he just didn't want to stick around for it. He wasn't feeling it. He left. And this was before everything that happened in the Swiss facility. So I don't know. But I think we'll go ahead and wrap it up there because we've been going for a while, if that's okay with you guys.
Yes.
Yep. No, it works for me.
All right. Well, as for the show here, if you guys have a question for Lore Watch, as always, you can go ahead and email that to podcast@blizzardwatch.com. Just be sure to put Lore Watch in the subject line so that we know that it's intended for the show. Next time, we'll probably go back to World of Warcraft, or we'll go back to, I don't know, whatever we find fascinating. We'll find out when we get there. For you guys, listeners of Blizzard Watch, Audible's offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. Here's the deal. There are a lot of Blizzard titles that are available on Audible. You can pick one of those titles for your 30-day trial if you would like. At this point in time, I just went and looked it up just to double check here. You can pre-order Before the Storm as part of your 30-day trial. Before the Storm will be coming out with an audiobook version. It will be available on Audible. If you want to sign up with your 30-day trial and you want to use your freebie with your 30-day trial to pre-order Before the Storm before it hits, go right ahead. They will allow you to do that. Again, you can sign up to do that at blizzardwatch.com/audible. And every time you sign up, help support the show. We appreciate that. Blizzard Watch. It's made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch, and your continued support means that this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience. So, final thoughts, you guys, and we'll try and keep this brief, but obviously, Retribution is the second entry in this whole Overwatch Archives thing, now that they've come out with the name Overwatch Archives. So we've visited Uprising with the whole Null Sector Uprising in King's Row. We've visited Retribution, this whole Venice incident that basically exposed Blackwatch to the world at large. What other parts of Overwatch's history do you want to see made into an Archives event?
I want to see how Roadhog and Junkrat, how they I want to see the whole thing played out of how they originally got kicked out.
Okay.
I want that to be an event. I want that to be a playable event.
Rossi, what about you?
How did Overwatch happen?
You want to see the original formation?
First mission? Yeah, what was the first mission? When did it, what happened that was so bad that the rest of the world finally got off their collective butts and said, we need a group to take on this together. We can't do this by ourselves. We need a single organization to fight it. I want to see that. I want to see like whatever it was that was so bad that they needed Overwatch. Because they were fighting the Omnics for a while without them. I want to see like the moment that they said, no, we need Overwatch and Overwatch's first mission.
Do you know what I want to see? I want to see the events leading up that last confrontation between Morrison and Reyes. I want to see the explosion at the Swiss facility, the accident, whatever that accident happened. They call it an accidental explosion at the Swiss facility. I want to see what the ramp up to that was, and I want to see what made that occur. And I imagine that the end of that would be very sad, because obviously at the end of that, we assume that Morrison and Reyes are no longer with us at all. But I think that would make a great Archives event. I don't know about you guys.
I'd be in for that too.
Overwatch, yep. just Overwatch has been around, like the organization has been around so long that there are so many different points in history that they could pick from. So yeah, any of those would be good. I would love to see Archives exist more than once a year in April. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'd like them to be playable longer, yeah.
I'd like to see them like once every 6 months or so, like do two a year.
Or, I mean, if they keep adding more to them, you can just run them in a rotation. I'm just, you know, it'd be great.
I'm okay with them being in bonus content, but like I said, I'd love to see it more frequently than once a year, particularly when they're as story heavy as they are, because that's what makes them so appealing. That's part of what makes them so appealing. Anyway, thanks you guys, as always, for listening, and we will see you again in 2 weeks.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to PrettyLitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.